The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for the 2001 movie Glitter starring Mariah Carey. If you do not want this movie spoiled, we suggest you stop listening now, watch the movie, then come back. Enjoy. Was it a cinematic abomination or a misunderstood sparkling diamond? Christian and I watched the Mariah Carey film Glitter from 2001 to see if there were any redeeming features. Did we find any? Find out after the theme!
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features Cast, where we take on the 2001 movie Glitter. I believe this was meant to be a star vehicle to help Mariah Carey cross over to cinematic blockbuster. I'm not too sure if it went that way for her. Of course, I've got Christian with me, as always. Hello, Christian. I should have introduced myself.
Well, this is Trevor, and I'm Christian. Thanks for having me, Trevor. I don't know necessarily if it's about a movie that we really want to be talking about, but hey, we've considered ourselves up for the challenge.
Absolutely. Always up for a challenge. So what we do, I think we'll get straight into it. Now, if you remember from last time, we kind of brought in a new bit to get the ball rolling, which we're calling, for the time being, Turkey Trivia. Gobble, gobble, gobble! I don't know, maybe I'll put a theme in there. Who knows? So,
no, I think...
So the vital stats, I suppose, for this turkey, to talk turkey... this movie came out in 2001, is rated a grand total of 2.1 on IMDb. Now, it was made for an estimated budget of $22 million and grossed just about $5.2 million worldwide. Do you think that is justifiable?
Oh, ouch. Look, it's more like what I say a lot of times in these, Trevor. Where is that money on the screen? You cannot see it. Maybe from what I've heard about Mariah Carey, it was probably going to her rider for backstage for her trailer.
True. Or perhaps to all the extras in the endless nightclub scenes. I've pretty get it.
Oh my gosh, you know. Look, unfortunately, I suppose is the word I'm looking for. I came across when I was Googling Glitter, I came across a picture, I don't know if you saw it, and it was a billboard of Glitter with the Twin Towers burning behind it. It was actually taken, obviously, during the September 11 attacks. Now, this is two things, you know, that it was released at the time that this was happening, so a lot of people were saying this was responsible for its box office. But it's also quite an interesting, not to lump it in with September 11, but it's quite an interesting picture to look at, because you're thinking, wow, the abomination that Glitter is happening alongside all of this. And it really kind of sums up what the film is like, an absolute train wreck. Really a vanity project gone wrong. Now, I use the term vanity project because I've noticed that's come up quite a lot in research. You know, I'm thinking of artists like, you know, Barbra Streisand and other sort of performers that they sort of have to write, direct, star. They become such an ego on the set, and they almost drive every scene and every part of the movie. And now I don't know what Mariah, aside from writing the music and performing it, I don't know what her, I suppose, writing or any other kind of credits were for the film, but this was definitely a vanity project like no other, and one that just falls so flat. Now, Trevor, you mentioned it being the film that was supposed to, you know, take her into movie stardom. Have we seen her in any movies since? That will tell the viewer the listener exactly what Glitter is like.
Absolutely. Now, you've probably jumped the gun on a couple of things there, plus with the trivia. But trivia did come across is that it was released after the terrible events of 9/11, and a lot of its, I suppose, its defenders have used that to help justify its low box office. But I think the fact that it's a bit crap, is also a good reason for its lack of box office. I do have a couple of other bits of trivia here that I did find out that were a little bit of interest. First up, that they were so concerned about the Mariah Carey songs being bootlegged before release that during the filming they actually used a backup singer to record all of her vocals, and she only came in at the last minute to put the lead vocals on top. So you do hear her in the movie, but it was very much a last-minute addition because they were so scared of people stealing these songs and releasing them before the movie came out.
Oh, gosh, don't want to ruin the sales of the soundtrack.
Yeah, which leads us down to my other part. They were so concerned that when the soundtrack CD was released, it was actually the weakest-selling album in Mariah Carey's career, and it actually made Virgin Records cancel her contract.
Ooh, like, no, not knowing much about Mariah Carey, I get the feeling that most of the songs that we heard, and there were quite a lot of them, I'll get to that later, I assume they were all new songs written for the movie. None of them sort of sounded like, you know, older hits of hers. So it is interesting, as you said, that they were worried about bootleggers, and you just think to yourself, well, if they were actually good songs, but hey, I do know some Mariah Carey fans, and they are quite obsessed. So I can understand. But, you know, this almost hits home, that whole thing about how vain this woman is. You know, she would have been behind things like that. So it's really quite astounding how egotistical she is, or was.
Yeah, I assume she still is, but I guess, yeah, we haven't heard much from her for a while. And never being much of a Mariah fan to begin with, I kind of don't mind that much, especially after watching this.
Definitely. And I'm glad we don't have to see her on our movie screens again.
Very true. And we're I guess we're not bearing the lead this time around. I think the listeners can already guess our feelings towards this movie. But before we go into that in a bit more detail, thought we'd have a little look at Amazon first and start at the low point and see if we can work up to something a bit more optimistic. And I've got a review here by one Amazon user whose title of the review is "All That Glitters Isn't Gold." While I enjoy Mariah Carey's music, this movie is a train wreck. Only not the kind you can't turn away from. This is easy to walk away from. The movie is uninspired, as is the acting. It boggles the mind what makes pop divas think that because they can sing well, they can also act. This is only proven true with a few artists, and the others are simply not acting material. Mariah would not... get your stand instruction right, mate. Mariah would fall into that category. Her acting lacks emotions and drive. It seems like she is shifting from scene to scene, just being there like scenery. The supporting cast is better, but not much either. The script is a mess too. After a few scenes in the beginning where we see Carrie's character being taken away, we're supposed to feel compassion, but it doesn't happen. Basically, the movie is just to show off Mariah's vocal skills, which you already knew she had. Plain and simple. Overall, the acting is horrible and the movie is boring. Stay away from glitter. Do you feel he's being harsh?
Actually, no. I'm sitting here nodding. No, yes. Sorry, Mariah fans. I'm sitting here nodding, you know, at everything you're saying. Train wreck is definitely a great way to sum it up. And, you know, you've got a lot of these, you know, people over the years that have done the whole transition or trying to do the transition from singer to a movie star. It just doesn't work. And I think this would have probably worked, not that I'm suggesting her to have ever done this, this would have possibly worked as a whole collection of, I don't know, music videos that are roughly telling a tale. Something where you didn't have to have such a thin plot being weaved through. Because if you really break it down, Trevor, it had, you know, it was the, well, I've got the word obvious written here. It was the most obvious of plots. It's like, you could see where all of this was going a mile away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, predictability was high.
Oh, you know, and the thing is, too, it was, you know, this thin plot weaved around these, you know, hundreds upon, when we get to the music, I'll mention the hundreds upon thousands of Mariah Carey songs that we hear. So, and using a plot that has been used so many times before, I go back to one of my favourite movies, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls by Russ Meyer, and I actually felt like I was watching a film like this where they try to throw in all these flashy cuts to make it look exciting, and that it's almost this whole, you know, the behind the scenes of showbiz. But Beyond the Valley of the Dolls was a tongue-in-cheek parody. Glitter is trying so hard to tell this story in the most serious way possible, and it's just coming, it just comes across so clunky, and oh my god, there were so many moments where my mouth was just on the ground. But yeah, you were really getting a plot and trying to stretch it. And then I couldn't believe that the running time was 1 hour 44, and I'm like, what? You know, and you mentioned the earlier scenes with, you know, they're trying to, they did whatever they could to try and give her some kind of a backstory, give her a character by having the early, you know, flashback scenes. And you know it's a flashback because it's always filmed in these really murky kind of cinematography.
Yeah,
and to give her sort of this whole quest to finding her mum. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. I mean, they certainly try to fit a lot of tragic backstory in for her in that first 10 minutes. I mean, her mum's a lounge singer who takes her to the club at night. Dad doesn't want anything to do with her. Then her house burns down. Then she gets taken away from mum and put in an orphanage and suddenly has a kitten, which then disappears again pretty much after that scene. We'll come back to that later. it's just so much tragic backstory in those first 10 minutes. And then it cuts to modern time, and it's like, well, she doesn't seem to be that bad off for it.
But then, like, continuing on from that, you've got that first 10 minutes where, you've got that the whole backstory where they crammed it in, and then you almost feel like the next 10 minutes, and I've kind of got a note here that about 25 minutes is when she gets her record contract. It's almost 10 minutes of people bowing at her going, oh, Billy, this is the character's name. Oh, Billy, you can really sing well. And it's just so obvious. Gee, she's part of a backup group, and everyone's saying how great she is and how much she stands out over everyone else. Can't see where this is going at all. And I just felt it was 10 minutes of all these different characters. You just, okay, just give her the contract and move on. But the only part that I was fearful of is 25 minutes in, she's got this record contract, and I'm sitting here thinking, does this mean I've now got 1 hour 20 more of her career, her ups and downs, to endure? And that was kind of what was happening.
Yeah,
but they crammed so much in the earlier part, and then they had to try and flesh out the plot to sustain its running time.
Yeah, I did quite find it quite funny when she meets Dice, the man whose
DJ Dice.
DJ Dice, the man whose shirt cannot be done up. But
he's trying so hard to be Jim Morrison in one scene too, with the leather pants and no shirt. You're like, oh, why are you bothering?
again, I'll come back to him as well, but just in the scene where he offers to produce her, I couldn't help notice that she's got this hat with this very large brim on it, and like all around this hat is like product logos. It's the most product placements I've ever seen on one hat. I would be confident in saying that this movie probably would hold the record for the most product placement on a hat.
I couldn't believe it. But going on from the hat, the outfit in general and the outfits that she wore in this film, like, I know I did some research and it's supposed to be, you know, it is set in 1982, but it was like she was doing anything she could do to stand out. Again, going back to this whole vain ego sort of thing, she had to always stand out, wearing a lot of pink, I noticed, throughout this movie, you know, whereas everyone else is wearing all these dark sort of clothes. It was like always like, you know, she's like had to stand out all the time. And yeah, it's I know we didn't see much product placement from then on, but yeah, I did notice the hat too and thought, this is the most ridiculous outfit. What, the worst entrance possibly of an actress, if I can even say that, in movie history, I think, is seeing this kind of bashful looking, rosy cheeked wooden person enter for the first time wearing this outrageous costume. So yeah, I felt it quite strange.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I will mention this now. I mean, a lot of this movie is focused on the music of Mariah Carey, or Billy, if you prefer, as the character name. I find that I didn't mind it too much, though, when in some of the incidental scenes they brought in some licensed music from elsewhere. There were some good tracks in this movie, including a few.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, including a few that weren't actually released until later in the 80s, which I thought was quite amusing.
Ah, yes. Well, I actually really love it. It was funny because I really like the soundtrack. I'm like, no, I do not like the Glitter soundtrack. I like the non-Mariah Carey songs in this film. You know, and yeah, they really had a great... And being set in 1982, you sort of had, yeah, you had your Heart of Glass Blondie, you know, so you they were still clubbing to that then, you know. Yeah, so that a lot of those was right. But yeah, as you said, a few songs that were just not quite right chronologically.
No. I think they may have skimped a little on the research.
Just a guess.
Oh, possibly. That I think the rest of the time was spent. I think the other $4.5 million went to Mariah's yeah, budget just for her. But like, you know, I started off. You know, I was kind of going to angle my my words tonight in the way of breaking it down into time, because I did actually start making a bit of a list here. But I did abandon that halfway through. Now, just looking at this list I've made. Now, this was taking note, Trevor, of the music that was used in the film. This is not the the other licensed music, but the Mariah Carey songs. And literally, I've got a list here that's sort of going 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 9 minutes. You know, accruing sort of 3 or 5 minutes every time. And this is every time you hear a Mariah Carey song in this film. Now, this is, believe it or not, is correct. And, you know, it might be. There's one particular song called, I've actually researched this, unfortunately, I have to Google it, but there's a song called Twister, which is, I've noticed the lyrics are very much, like, I've got one line here, "She had a lot to grapple with," is one of the lines. And they bring this song in, I can't remember it offhand, Trevor, but it's a song you hear so many times that they've almost, like, I don't know, it must have been the supposed hit single from the film, but that song was played so many times to the point of you were hearing way too many of her songs. And I just felt that's why it felt like it was just a whole heap of songs strung together with a very thin plot. But, yeah, it got to the point where I was sick to death of hearing her songs.
I definitely tuned out anything by her, even the touching final song was just like, yeah, whatever, get over it, move on.
But then, like, you know, as I was thinking about it too, and Mariah Carey does have a big sort of, has a big gay audience, and, you know, having said in 1982, they could be quite colourful, quite out there with the song choices, so and that would be mainly the audience going to see this film, and that sort of made me wonder why they went with a lot of those choices with the, you know, the soundtrack and the costuming. But, you know, definitely they would have been better off doing a really awesome 80s movie. But anyway.
Yeah. And I can tell you what, I mean, you mentioned there the whole getting the contract, and like a third of the way through the movie, they're pretty much moving into the whole, hey, I've got a contract, and starting starting to get going. And I don't know if it was a pacing or the fact that it actually felt like it was going somewhere, but about a third of the way through is where I got the feeling that if this movie was in, I suppose, better hands with a better scriptwriter, had characters I cared about played by people that it could actually act, it could have potentially been a better movie. I was very quickly relieved of that feeling within, I think, the next 10 minutes. But I've got to admit, I had a brief moment where I thought, I could see where this could be a decent movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I thought something very similar in terms of, you know, I mentioned how there was kind of a whirlwind in the first 20 minutes, but it was almost like they were getting the intro part over and done with, and then they were going to really get in and give these characters some meat, you know, and unfortunately, no, they just inserted more songs that you, you know, would sing for the 10th time. So, yeah, it had so much potential. Now, Jess Mariano, I don't know if I assume that's a female. She was actually, or he or she was the screenwriter, and I assume that they have not got much work since Glitter, but it could have almost have been written, the script could have almost been written by Mariah herself. Just some of the lines was just so, you know, terrible.
Yeah, it was a very poorly written movie, and just some of the things, there was some consistency in there. If you look at the relationship between Billy and, oh, look, my shirt's undone again, Dice. Yeah. They go on not a date, which leads to what I guess is not a love scene. And then I guess they do the not moving in together thing. And towards the end, when everything is getting all tense, they have not a breakup.
And then when she's trying to resolve things with him at the end, well, there's going to be a spoiler, but, you know, he's not there for her to be able to fix everything up with her. So it really, the ending and a lot of these other things sort of becomes kind of pointless. So they have
not a reunion.
Yeah, it never really exists at all. But this is all, again, like I was saying before, the predictability of the whole thing. You know, it was so obvious. Of course, I get a contract. things start to go bad. You know, we have a lover's tiff. There's other producers involved, because, of course, another producer has to come in, because everyone wants to get their hands on Billy Frank because she's the hottest new thing. Because she sells out Madison Square Garden like that, which, again, I know you were mentioning pacing, but it all seemed to happen over so quickly. She has one hit on the radio, and then forever her career is made, mm-hmm. it seems.
Yeah, I actually quite like how after that hit was heard on the radio, we finally get glitter in this movie. They cut to filming a music video, which to me looked a lot like the Mariah Carey music videos I remember enduring on various music television shows back in the day, where she's not wearing much clothing and there's lots of sparkles. But I thought, hey, there's some glitter. Woo!
But at the same time, too, it did also feel like an outtake out of RuPaul's Drag Race or something like that. There was something kind of camp, something kind of not right about it. But hey, she was covered in glitter and sparkles, so it's easy to have confused it.
With the her two best friends who turn up whenever it's kind of convenient within the plot.
Yeah, they kind of thought, oh, we've got to have more in our contract. We've got to do more. We better give them something else to do. Because, and of course, there's the traditional thing that happens in these movies. You know, when she gets closer to the producer or the friends sort of end up being taken for a ride, or in this case, kicked out of a cab or leave a cab. So, they seem to be written in only when it was convenient.
Yeah, and I kept thinking that, okay, I mean, it was a very predictable movie, there's no doubt about that. No, I was thinking, okay, she's going to have some sort of fight with the two friends because they're being left out of everything. But nope. When she needs them, they're there. It's all good. When they have the not the lover's tiff, and she storms out of Dice's house and picks up a fully grown cat on the way out, I might add. I'm guessing that cat is a symbol of her being homeless. Since it was a kitten at the start and the cat is just leaving Dice's house.
Yeah.
And she goes back to her friend's place, and yep, she can just walk straight in and everything's good and there's been no problems in the meantime. Everyone's happy.
But on the way, of course, she has to, I think it might have been the same thing, but on the way she had to see a lady that was homeless that she mistaken for her mum, who she's been looking for since the start of the movie. So, you know, God, a lot happens to her when she leaves the house.
Absolutely. Actually, at one point I thought they were indicating that the mum had died at some point, but then suddenly there's a whole plot line of her trying to track her down and checking the records, and you're going, oh, so she's not dead. They're going through the mum's belongings. I'm thinking, if the mum is still alive, why did they have like a box of her belongings? Especially if Billy had not seen her since leaving her with the kitten at age, what, 10, 13, 14? I think it's been about 10 years, so that cat is also quite elderly by the time she leaves Dice's house. And I was convinced by the fact that they're going through the belongings, she finds a photo that the mum had died at some point. And then suddenly they insert, I'm going to find my mum now plot into this movie that's already over halfway finished.
Well, to be honest, I actually thought the homeless lady was going to be her mum. I thought it would just fit the predictability of this movie so much. I was not surprised if that had happened. But we do mention spoilers, you know, the ending, Trevor. Oh my God, you know, coming back to the whole mother sort of situation where they've tried to tag this subplot in and use that as almost a way to resolve the film, but then they don't actually resolve the film. It just kind of ends because they've killed off the person that she's been having this relationship with the entire time. So really there's nothing there. I don't know. I just felt they really should have used the mother thing a lot more rather than the relationship with Dice, I think.
That whole thing with Dice being shot by the other producer, and they cut to the newscaster, and she's saying, producer Dice, whatever his full name was, has been found with a gunshot wound to his chest. The police consider it a homicide. It's like, that's amazing deductive reasoning by the police.
I know, oh God. And, like, you get the feeling, I don't know if it was you know how Mariah walks into the room while they're watching the news report? I'm getting the feeling that she'd already known the news, or was she seeing it for the first time? I didn't quite know how to interpret that, but anyway, she seemed like she already knew.
I think she's meant to be discovering it there, but Mariah Carey is just a very, very poor actor.
Oh, and she said, I mentioned earlier, she sort of had this, this real bashful, almost, I suppose would be a good thing, but this bashful kind of thing, and she's very plastic, there's not much to her face, you know, there wasn't much movement. We have said earlier, she's not much of an actress, but at the same time too, when you have to say some of the dialogue that is included in this movie, I can see why.
I think she probably considered it good dialogue, because she's not much of an actor.
Exactly. But, like, you know, having her say lines, like, you know, when he gives her escargot for the first time, you know, you have snails, you know, I don't know if they're specifically eating at a French restaurant, but, you know, and her line is, someone went all the way to France for this, you know, just real dumb things, that you, just real sort of lines that you'd write to really, to pad out something that's quite short. You know, the part that made me kind of laugh is when she went to Dice's house for the first time and she shows him, you know, he's a music producer, so, you know, he's around music all the time. He's got a picture of him as a pianist, I think it was, or a guitarist as a kid.
Yeah.
He's got a xylophone or something in the corner. And the first thing she does is turn to him and go, "You play?" I just was like, oh, no.
I know. At one moment they were trying to push her through as this, you know, woman who knows what she wants and is capable of looking after herself. And then the next moment, she's a complete bimbo that doesn't have a clue about anything. I did see, though, I thought it was quite nice that when she changed the playlist of that Madison Square Garden concert so she could sing that very, very touching, somber song, dedicated, I guess, to the now-departed Dice, that, you know, the entire concert or the backup dancing or the lighting, you know, they were still able to synchronize with her.
Yeah. The band just knew exactly what to do, you know, it's always the way, God. But it just felt like, you know, they're not relationship was very awkward and, you know, like, and yeah, I've got another line here too where he, you know, like little awkward things where he says, "I've come up to my place for 5 minutes," and she has to retort with, "Maybe three, you know, and you're just like, oh, some of this dialogue is, the scary thing is it just actually suits the wide-eyed sort of blow-up dullness of her as she's walking through this movie. You kind of half expected this character to be like this, but I think it was even, because there were so many shockers on that date, the not date that she was on. And, but, you know, I remember I've written down here that when she arrives, of course she's in a pink dress and everyone else in the scene is wearing, you know, darker colours, of course, so she can stand out. But she goes, walks through to this restaurant with Dice, but it's the longest shot. They get out of the car, and it could just be something, you know, they walk in where any other director would cut to it or do a cut fade or something like that, and they're now having dinner. No, we have to see them get out of the car, walk all the way through. All the people in the restaurant turn their head, acknowledge the fact that this woman's dressed differently. Then you see her slowly and woodenly walk to her table and sit down. Oh, and I'm just sitting there going, gosh, they really were trying to make the plot, the movie as long as possible. You know, it just felt so awkward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that not a date scene was painful to sit through.
Oh, especially considering it's not a date, and he picks her up in a limo and then gives her a red rose on arrival. Yeah, you're kind of getting a bit of an idea here.
Yeah,
and then it seems like 5 minutes later they're moving in together.
Pretty much, and when you consider that, again, I mean, coming back to that that finale where she's reunited with her mother, the way it ends on that, it's almost like the reunion with her mother is almost the whole point of the movie. It suddenly becomes all about that, which means that everything with regards to the not a date, not a romance, not a love scene, let's walk around with sad music as we contemplate our life without each other, shenanigans that went on prior to that, is really completely secondary to the fact that she got back with her mum who hadn't aged at all.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. You know, where's got Mariah who looks, you know, doesn't even look anything like the girl that was playing her, you know, and you got the mum. time. Yeah, it was ridiculous, you know. And I think possibly, I don't know if it would have made for a better film, but maybe if they hadn't shock horror killed off Dice, they would have been able to concentrate on possibly them rekindling their relationship. She has her big Madison Square Garden concert and everything's all happy, la-la, and she does a big glittery musical number at the end. But no, they had to go back to the mother subplot, which, yeah, we kind of hadn't been giving two hoots about for the last hour and 44 minutes. So, yeah, it's a strange thing to have happened. So it left me with a real... And the ending left me with, I think I even said out loud, ah, is that it?
Pretty much. I tell you what, I would forgive this movie almost all of its sins if at that last scene, because there's an earlier moment where Billy talks about a dream where she's at Madison Square Garden and she looks down and she sees her mother in the front row. If she had come through, met her mum and just gone, "Why the hell weren't you in the front row like in my dream, you bitch?" I would have just gone, "Yes!"
I know. So that, again, that whole dream, the whole point of her bringing up that dream didn't end up getting resolved or anything, you know? Yes. Oh, but yeah, they could have done something so much better.
and then, the credits roll with more horrendous Mariah Carey music, and I think this is one of the times where I've really regretted setting the rule that we have to sit all the way through to the end of the credits.
I know. I thought that too. I even wanted some kind of, I don't know, a blooper reel or something to show at the very end just so I could get through that that end scene in some way.
Yep. But I think the fact that we are now talking about the ending credits of the movie probably indicates that that we should maybe move on. In amongst all our wonderful talk about the wondrous events in this movie, I've got to ask you, Christian, did you find anything redeemable?
Well, I find this movie, well, to answer that straight out, I find this irredeemable. However, I probably think the things to recommend it, I'm probably going ahead of myself, but it's definitely irredeemable, and I can go into a bit of detail aside from the stuff that I have been mentioning for the last little while, but definitely irredeemable. I wouldn't wish anyone to want to watch that unless you want to sort of have a movie night with a group of friends and do a sort of a showgirls type thing, but you know, at least showgirls is tolerable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean. There are some songs I like in there which aren't sung by Mariah Carey.
They're probably a selling point.
Yeah, they're about the only redeemable things I can think in this movie. Beyond that, it's just such a poorly written, poorly acted, poorly directed pile of dinky poo with just horrible, horrible, high-pitched, you know, songs that really did hurt my ears on a number of occasions. This movie is just, seriously, I don't think it's quite as bad as Geely was, but I could see them being put into a "here are two atrocious movies" double feature.
Well, interestingly enough, Trevor, they're both released by Columbia Pictures, so that double feature, you know, could be granted. But let's stay away from that, I think.
that much awful in one place would not be good for anybody.
And I'd be a bit worried about the sort of people going to see those kind of movies, if you know what I mean. They're sort of people you do not want to be friends with.
Absolutely.
As my notes say, going back to the whole, you know, is it redeemable, is it not redeemable, I say it's irredeemable, and my notes are here. It's got some great retro songs, retro being non-Mariah Carey songs, and obsessed Mariah Carey fans who have to see every single thing she does, hear everything she does, need only apply. That's it for me, I think.
I think my main summary of this movie would be, stuff happens, the end.
Exactly. Stuff happens, she finds her mum, no one cares.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? I think there are people out there that did care. Would you believe that?
Wow, you were able to find a good review, good being the operative word.
Well, I have found a review, and I was very careful. Obviously, there are a number of joke five-star reviews out there. Some of them are quite funny, but I thought, you know, we do need to see... would you try to focus on the redeemable side of things? So What I've got here is a review titled Wasn't Given a Fair Chance. Believe me when I say I am not a huge Mariah Carey fan. Also believe me when I say I loved Glitter. The storyline was wonderful. I really hate it for Mariah and the others that this movie was just picked apart so badly. Unfortunately, it was released on the heels of tragedy, and therefore not given the chance it was warranted. I also fear that Mariah Carey wasn't given the chance to excel because of her, in quotes, breakdown. I don't think a breakdown necessitates critics blasting apart an entire movie over one player. I think the story was well written and flowed nicely. It had comedy and drama and catchy songs. Before this movie was totally picked apart and not given a fair chance, the critics should look long and hard at all the crap we've had this past year. Ease up on Glitter, buy it, rent it, own it, it's great, then all the capitals, really, exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
Oh gosh, that was one of these obsessed Mariah fans, I think, that I mentioned earlier. Gosh, I would struggle.
But they, she says she's not a huge Mariah fan.
I don't know, because to me they seem to be the only people that would be into this, but even then would be a slight chance, but no, I do not. I see it as a glittering pile of something else.
Yes, it may have glitter on it, but you don't want to stick your finger in that pile.
You definitely do not want to throw it all over your body and all over your costume, and specifically not all over your product placement. Cap.
That's right. So I think that is safe to say an absolutely resounding irredeemable. Glitter is indeed a pile of crap. Anyway, so let's just move on. Now, I have, I suppose, been hogging the movie choices with the relaunched Redeeming Features podcast so far. So, Christian, after making you watch this, I'm kind of dreading what you might be suggesting for the next one.
Ooh, Trevor, as you know, there's so many movies out there that I almost want to unleash on you and consider for redeeming features. But I thought I'd find one that ties in quite relevantly to someone I quite like. Not, I suppose the actress probably isn't the word. The person that features in this film, I'm quite a fan of. Not for their film work. So sticking on with the theme that we've gone with Glitter. God, I almost struggled to forget the name. I almost struggled to remember the name of the movie again. I've forgotten it already. But yeah, sticking with our whole singer to actress theme, we're going to try something along those lines. Now, I sort of want to give it a bit of context too. You're looking at, one of these great directors, like, what's someone who we can think of from the late 90s? Let's look at someone like Guy Ritchie. He had such great hits as Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. He had Snatch. And then he's had in recent years the Sherlock Holmes movie, but it's very rare that many people go back and look at his 2002 disaster starring his then-wife, Mrs. Guy Ritchie, Madonna. It was called Swept Away. A remake of a 1974 film, it was an absolute disaster, and it's taken pretty much over a decade for Guy Ritchie to try and to bounce back from this. Madonna is awful in it. Guy Ritchie regrets ever having made it, and I thought with Madonna having announced her upcoming Australian tour for next year and the big Madonna party next month, I thought what great timing it was to, for me, revisit this film and for you, Trevor, see this abomination firsthand. Are you up for the challenge?
You know, I'm always up for the challenge. You've picked another movie that I thought I would never watch. I think it's safe to say that with the redeeming features, there is no such thing anymore.
Oh, definitely. And I think you really inspired me with some of the choices recently, Trevor, and I think it can only go downhill from here.
Woohoo! No? Oh, well.
So I look forward to seeing your thoughts, and incidentally, I have actually already seen the movie about twice before, so that's not saying it's a good movie, though, before I say anything further, but I will actually look forward to sitting down and revisiting it again with my redeeming features notepad in hand, mm-hmm. So we can pull apart the Madonna disaster epic, and let's watch firsthand the movie that probably ruined Guy Ritchie's career, and the movie I think that Madonna said she will never act in a movie ever again.
Sounds like a great job you're doing there, making me eager for this. But I do promise I will watch it with an open mind and keep my eye out for those redeeming features. Oh, dear. Now, if anybody out there has any thoughts or comments, Do you feel we were too harsh on Glitter? I think it's so bad that we were not harsh enough. We should have been a lot harsher, but then I probably would have to use the censor button a lot with any discussions about just how bad Glitter is. Or are you someone who has seen Swept Away and would like to perhaps put your own redeeming features forward for that? Could not be easier. Simply find the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook, and you can leave your comments there. You can also head to therufusproject.podomatic.com and leave comments below this very episode. So, Christian, well, I will have to see if Swept Away sweeps me away, or if maybe it should be just swept under the rug.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I look forward to revisiting it with an open mind too, so, and I'll get swept away with you next time, Trevor.
Oh, how romantic.
What one thing this movie isn't.
Well, absolutely. I definitely look forward to discussing Swept Away with you in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks a lot, Christian.
Good. Thanks, Trevor.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad. I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.